Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, a book on tape, chapter one. Privet Drive. The ominous fog makes the nighttime even more hoary and mysterious than usual here in suburban Britannia. Out from the shadows of God knows what dimension steps the oldest wizard in the books, the near-dead Dumbledore. He is clearly a powerful beast and walks with dignity despite his age and attire. He sees a cat that he knows right before he sets to work. He produces a wizard's tool known as the Street Darkener, and with a practiced angling of the arm, begins to siphon away the clarity made from mankind's bulbs. Magical deeds are afoot, dear readers. Magical darkness, a must. The atmosphere complete, the cat, now protected by shadows, transforms into who else but Professor Hardcastle McCormick, an old friend and ally of Dumbledore the Half-Dead. She is truly a great wizard also, and possesses many a skill that might aid in tonight's random errands. They speak gravely of tonight's horrible decision, and dear readers, trust me, their work tonight is dubious. What are they to do? Are they really going to go through with tonight's desperate plan? The choice is clearly in powerful hands, as Dumbledore ponders with his gigantic brain. Just then, a light approaches in the clouds. Shredding through the stratus descends no other than Hagar the Horrible. A huge man that, if you didn't know better, you may mistake him for a giant hairy truck. He is Dumbledore's gopher. And now, perched upon his sky leopard, Hagar seems at the end of an errand that has almost bested him. But lo, out from his manly pap, he produces the most powerful baby in the universe. Dumbledore accepts the swaddled child like the delicate button of an atomic bomb. His bowels tense, no false moves here. Hardcastle McCormick pleads with Dumbledore not to go through with the plan. What plan, you ask? Well, they are going to leave this veritable weapon of the gods, this paradox of babiness and power, right here on a freaking muggle's doorstep. But shh, says Dumbledore to the baby. And shh, he says to the lady. As Hagar gnashes his teeth in inner conflict and almost drowns in snotty, fearful tears, his master Dumbledore tells him to wait in the frickin' car if he has to. And the baby is left. The baby with the most telling of scars. The baby that is the seed of power. The baby that is the inheritor of the horrible, hoary hammer of the gods, Harry, the wizard who is destined to vanquish all evil, and if he so wish, bring it back again, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Chapter 2. Harry Potter wakes to the sound of his evil aunt banging on his bedroom's tiny door. His adopted family treats him so poorly, he can barely keep from incinerating them with any number of spells he keeps hidden way up his sleeves. Harry's room is cool, though. He's clearly made the most of it. Unlike his cousin, Roast Beefy, whose birthday happens to be today, the cousin has no idea of the power he is toying with. He is indeed a mean little puke who is borderline retarded, and must shout moistly every stupid sentence he manages to piece together. As Harry prepares breakfast, totally magic-free and labor-intensive, his vomit-inducing uncle, Gigglesnort, looks on as the evil mother does the blind man birthday dance with roast beefy. The living room turns out to be full of presents for the nonplussed roast beefy weefs. Of course, it is never, never, never enough. Chunks of demands splatter on his parents' faces. Harry must stay calm and repress his urges of igniting the house in a demonstrative fireball, ending the life of these three little pigs. But our wolf remains cool. Today the family is going to the zoo. And on the way, Uncle Pigfat sinisterly suggests a beating to Harry if he sees any kind of magic out of him. Ho ho, dear reader. It looks like Uncle Saltporker has some idea of our hero's magical brain. His face is the worst. The family seems to be happy with nothing. A giant Burmese leopard-eating snake basks in front of their piggish faces like a poem, and of course they want it to dance for them. But not our Harry. The sweet wizard in remission is psychically linked with the beautiful snake being, having dreamt himself of eating leopards, boars, and dick-dicks. And what do you know? Harry can actually speak with this creature. Will his talents ever stop emerging? Harry, with the social grace of a saint, is relating with the orphaned, captive, pig-hating snake. It is a beautiful moment indeed, and Harry for once feels in tune with the natural universe. This snake has no parents, is dangerous, and is beautiful. Harry sees himself here in this snake, like looking at his image in the mirror. It is a perfect moment. But Cousin Roast Beefy Weefs notices some action and runs over to spoil it. Harry totally loses it and frags Roast Beefy good with a glass begone spell. Wowoosh! The terrible cousin spills his ass into the cage as the supine beast nobly erects itself out and is thanking Harry as he slithers into the nightmare hearts of all the muggles nearby. Everyone is afraid of this beast but Harry. Of course, Harry, who seems to be part of the natural universe now. And what do you know, dear reader? Providence must have cast a glass be back spell. Cause take a look at the zoo's new acquisition. It is a play, a tragic comedy, The Lament of Roast Beefy O'Weefy. Ha ha ha! The family Porkums is hit palpably with shame. Yes, Harry, do laugh on. Laugh right in their unthinkable faces. Chapter 3. As the Hog family enters their home to regroup after Harry's formidable blow, Uncle Porkflaps tries to tear Harry's wig off before remembering that Harry is a boy and probably his hair is real. No more magic, his throat rasps without its usual gravy lube. Realizing his throat is foodless, Uncle Pigums exits for the kitchen. In the following weeks, Harry falls into a depression. He feels like an exile here in this world. He feels alone and hated. But Harry, going about his innumerable chores, picks up the mail, only to be bowled over at the discovery of a letter addressed to him. A connection is trying to be made, he thinks. Somebody needs me. Having delivered the mail, Harry tries to conceal his letter, but Cousin Ragtime Roast Beefy thinks that Harry has a possible cookie or wafer and takes away the letter before Harry can open it. Uncle Pigums inspects the letter the best he can with those eyes, and a phantom of fear crawls across his goutish face. Harry wonders what could be so wonderful. In the next few days, a miraculous event unfolds. Birds from every breed and fashion begin to crowd the Pork and Chips home with letters addressed to Harry. The uncle is beginning to feel the pressure. Harry, in a spiral of depression, turns to the escape of the world of miniature equine aficionado. He produces many a wine out of nowhere spell and is drunk every day before noon. He is only half aware of his uncle's battle with the birds. The aviary horde perch on everything perchable, tarping the yard, car, roof and all, in hawker-like bird waste, and of course, the letters. Every bird revels in the madness it is inducing on Uncle Saltporker. The house, under drifts of letters, molting in bird shit, now pushes the uncle to burn anything that is represented on paper. Harry threw a cloud of wizard magic and stealthily pinched Valium from the evil aunt, notices his uncle fraying. One morning, while doling out biscuits, Harry listens half-heartedly to his uncle's plan of a giant cat to be unleashed upon his feathery foes, but Harry's attention is drawn to the window. Sunlight. Harry could almost cry at this simple gift of the universe. If it weren't for these awful people, he would cry, but he must not show weakness, or else they'll hand him his ass. He tries to focus on the yard and the birds, and why are they trying to contact me? These facts make their way in through the jungle of a consciousness, just as a veritable fountain of bird-propelled letters issues forth onto the family. Harry decides that this is it. This is the moment. I must make my move in this masking of a snowstorm, and I will take one letter into my room and whisper it to my horses and see what they think. Oh, how the wine talks. But Harry cannot make it to his tiny door, even impeded by the onslaught of letters. The now totally bonkers Uncle Porkstar crashes down on Harry. The battle that would have been is now a sad display. Harry at the drunken bottom of a depression well, and his once formidable foe, mindless and flailing. Chapter 4. A crushing blue night lays upon the sleeping Porksters as Harry, awake and active, plays out his happiest of sad moments. Sigh. His birthday, of course. But who could care? Especially out here where love is dashed upon the rocks like a rose given as an insincere apology. Love. Don't give up on it, Harry. Make a wish upon it. Upon the stars. But blam! 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 At the door. The Porktown family scuttles into position, but what busts in the door is far more than expected. It is Hagar, the horrible, the nightmare of hair. A wall of a man, but buried under his woolen chest is a heart that I'd trust a baby with. After politely shutting the door, Hagar turns to the squawking uncle and aunt. His face is a mask that displays he is in no mood, and he bends the gun that is pointed in his face straight in half. A bullet ejects into the heavens, interrupting an angel's sleep. But oh no, Harry! Hagar confuses roast beef hewies for Harry. No, don't take that chili barrel to Hogwarts. Then Harry rolls into view. I am Harry. Now if you cry easy, be careful here, dear readers. For Hagar produces for Harry his first ever birthday gift. It is a cake, handmade no less, with love, by a warrior of the wind. "Who are you, nice man?" Harry asks, feigning a child's air. Hagar says, "Hagar," and tells Harry that he is the gatekeeper and keymaster at Hogwarts. Harry is confused, though he knows how to play his cards. A man like this could be in the market for a sidekick. What's Hogwarts? A masterful play by Harry. Hagar stumbles around with words and seems put off a bit at himself. Clearly, sidekicking for Hagar would suck balls. Hagar can't contain it anymore and just drops his secret. You're a wizard, Harry. Harry, with the talent of Laurence of Olivier, feigned surprise. I can't be a wizard. I'm just Harry. Again, with the oil of Olivier. Well, just Harry. I imagine then that lions are just lions, and gods are just gods. You are a special boy. You don't know it, but you and I go way back. Oh, Harry wishes he could have a glass of wine or something right now. Hagar gets up from the couch and produces a letter. It is clear now that Hagar is a bird friend, for indeed the letter is the same as before. Harry begins to read. Come to Hogwarts and become a wizard, Harry Potter, it says. He reads thus aloud. Uncle Baconface races in to interject a spit parade, which Harry translates into a most disturbing disclosure. The pigs knew all along. They knew that Harry's parents were wizards, of course. And now the sickest, pinched-up mouth of an aunt lets out that Harry's parents did not die in a car crash, but were, of course, destroyed in a much cooler way. A wizard's fight. She begins then to berate Harry's mom, calling her names and trying to say that Harry sucks and stuff like that. Her venom is sharp. Sucking is nothing Harry wants to do. Hagar then steps in, seeing that Harry is in no state to argue for himself. This night is gonna end good for Harry. End of story. As Roast Beef Weefs grabs Harry's cake and begins to munch it, Hagar describes the pigs as muggles to Harry. Musicating, magicless muggles. He lays down the law on Harry's schooling. A big fat yes, he's going. Hagar also goes on to say that the great Dumbledore is the teacher at Hogwarts and will make Harry into a man and stuff. Uncle Fat Train spews a slander on Dumbledore in return, and Hagar gives him a truly horrible face and points his magical umbrella and starts to say a spell like, "Don't ever talk again, fatty!" But the slobbering, smacking jowls of Roast Beefy Weefs interrupts him. And zap! Goes Hagar with the umbrella. And voila! A curled-up Cheeto shoots right out of Roast Bee's bottom. Woohoo! Shouts Harry. About time he burst that Cheeto. He's been trying to birth it for years. Hagar takes a sip off of what has to be whiskey and hands the flask to Harry. Harry takes a giant pull. And then Hagar says, "Let's get out of here. You like flying motorcycles?" Harry replies, "Anything's better than crawling." They both laugh and hold their bellies like two Santas on opposite ends of the scale. Harry gathers up his worn-out shoes and stuff that he wants to take with him. Chapter 5. Midday London. Whilst walking in broad daylight with Hagar the Horrible, Harry bravely reads his syllabus's demands. Wand, magic sand, one Turkish massage owl. Where can I ever obtain such obscurities? Hagar makes a knowing O shape with his hairy lips and directs Harry into a nondescript black plastic business. A bar? Hagar the Horrible, you better know what you're getting Harry into. Of course, the barkeep knows Hagar's bar-darkening frame. Hello, Hagar. Hello, Hagar. It comes from all directions. You want some beer? No, that's okay. I have Harry frickin' Potter with me today, and we're doing some shopping. The bar inhabitants crane their boozed-up eyeballs into view. They all want to see the legend of Harry P. Old women, leathery hats, and grizzled madmen pinch themselves under the tables to make sure that they are not dreaming. Harry handshakes with all. The defender of the dark arts teacher from Hogwarts School presents himself. His name is Professor Quirrell, he stutters. Clearly a fan of Harry. Harry then makes a series of heartwarming gestures in an effort to calm the star-struck prof's nerves. Harry is a soothing gentleman, and Queerman seems to feel at home in his presence. But Hagar moves along the business, for they have tons of shopping to do. He leads Harry out the back door and into what appears to be a dead-end alley. Hey, how do all those people know me back there? You want to do some shopping or what? A Masonic pentagram is described by Hagar on the brick wall. And shazam! The doorway to a magical world is a folded back, brick by brick, in an orgy of transformers for Harry's brain to take in. And ah, welcome to Calgon Alley. Dear readers, imagine music, la-da-da-da-da, alive and marketplacey, and violins taking a break up in the air with non-threatening amblings and a wreath of tambourine just lightly jangled. Inner scene of what looks like 1800s England, downtown. Buildings crowded in unstably around tons of magical kids with their parents scraping together their needs for the upcoming school year. We have witchy moms and wizardly dads and worried, hurried Harry acting excited and happy for Hagar's sake. Look, a Turkish massage owl! And look, it's a bat! Sweet mustache! Willikers! Harry watches kids breaking their nose cartilage on the window panes of broom stores. This is heaven. Chapter 6. I'm broke, Hagar. What do I do? I want that broom back there. Hagar happily extends a finger at the goblin bank of wobble columns. You got an account up in there, Master Harry. They enter the foyer among evil, pasty, hobbity, uff-goody goblins. They are running the money show. Clever turnips, these needle teeth. Imagine a human of about 3 years of age, with antler-like nose and ears, and a jellyfish draped over its head, then stuffed into a leprechaun's suit. Hagar prompts the nearest leprechaun teller for a withdrawal from Harry's account. The leprechaun, famousness of Harry aside, demands Master P's bank key. Luckily, Hagar, the key master, naturally produces Harry's key. What else of mine does he have? Harry ponders. Now pay attention, dear readers. Hagar then very earnestly gives the leprechaun an envelope and says that it is from Dumbledore and that it has to do with that vault, that special vault. The goblin is in time with Hagar, and they know that this is grave business. Soon they are riding to the vaults on a roller coaster. The grossest-looking humanoid in the world tries to scuttle around on its moon-shaped limbs. It tries to remain cool and orders Hagar and Harry to follow it. It unlocks the door and backs away, trying to resemble what it thinks is a cool-looking person. But in reality, it is freaking Harry and Hagar out miserably. The door to Harry's vault swings open, and right away starts to blow the socks off of Harry P. Hagar makes noises out of his mouth, but Harry is not available. The piles of gold that are his instantly make everything beautiful for Harry. It's gonna be okay, he thinks. Now on to yet another vault. More of my gold, Harry hopes. The leprechaun lifts a clawed finger up and down, tickling the doors back enough that it unclenches in its threshold and swings open, not to reveal a pile of treasure, but to reveal a silly little gunny sack. Hagar walks in, snatches up the gunny sack, and stows it away on his humongous person. This is between you, me, and the little Paddy McGrossout, okay, H.P.? Harry nods. Chapter 7. Back on the shopping tour, and Harry needs a wand. Go up in Ed Vander's. I've got to attend to a few other details, and I'll meet you in there later, says Hagar. So here he enters Ed Vander's Wand Emporium. The shop is full to the ceiling with wands. Which one to brandish? Which one to call my psyche's extension? Harry irks out a few husky hellos. Hello? 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 But jeepers! Ed Vander's rushes into Harry's view like a scarecrow's carcass. A dreadful visage indeed, and a ghastly voice. Harry Potter, welcome. Master H is beginning to feel animosity towards his own celebrity. Harry gazes at the man's skin, a ketchupy callus of a face. I will make spells that will save me from looking like him. Harry makes that mental note, I assure you. The mental notes are stacking. Ed Vander's produces a wand that he thinks is suitable for our Harry. But on the first try, Harry totally frigs up half the store with that wily stag of a twig. His stockpiles of nuclear-level energy will be funny and tricky to funnel, thinks Ed Vander's. Vander's is tenacious. He pokes around in stacks of wand boxes for round two. A bigger wand, he suspects, will be suitable. Harry, now bored and tired, brandishes again, but kabloomers! Destruction! Vander's with a why-didn't-I-think-of-it-before look, the look that everyone's dad puts on when he's trying to pick out shoes and clothes for their kid, even though they have had thought of this before. From the beginning, in fact, they just want to dry out the afternoon with needless driving around and tryings on because they don't know what else to do with their kids. Well, Vander's puts on that kind of a look, and music galore fills the shop. He stands in front of Harry like some freaking Amadeus. He is no doubt imagining our Harry as his orchestra. And Vander's is flabbergasted at how good of a choice he has made. He starts to whisper like a thespian in a particularly juicy role. This wand's brother is the wand of that scar maker, the guy who gave you your famous scar. Harry almost dookies a shooter, but controls himself. Harry is sick of whispery games, and he says normally, what is this scar maker's name? Ed Vander's all but holds up a skull and soliloquies. Oh, we don't say his name. But know this, he is a badass. He can kill anyone, anything, a gorilla or a bear, whatever, anything. Anything but you. Ed Vander's wasteland of a face crowds in close. His monologue is stinky. You are in a great position. You are an army of wizards, Mr. Potter. Use yourself wisely. His breath cascades over Harry's unbreathing nose. How long must I go without an intake of air? Thinks our Harry. It is the only thought that consumes his brain. Finally, breaking the mood, Hagar taps the window. Holy balls, he's bought the Turkish owl! Hurrah! Chapter 8. Hagar and Harry sit eating supper in a foggy wine spewed in. The depression creeps into Harry again. His powers seem infinite. Everyone loves and fears him. But he himself can't seem to find his place among them. He is outside of people, and the wine flows. So in an effort to cheer Harry up, Hagar decides to tell the tale of Harry's parents' death. Valmart is the name of the scar maker, he whispers. He is a wizard with uncanny powers. But this guy is so evil, as soon as he came out of the womb, he put a scar on his own forehead. Well, Valmart went to Hogwarts and started the Dark Side Club. It was actually the coolest club to be in at first. Everyone got a kick out of being in a club that stories were told about. You know, that's all anyone ever does anything for anyway, the sake of a story to be made of them. Well, you can be sure that Valmart earned his share of stories. You know, the club got strict. You had to love evil and not be shy about using murder spells, or else you'd be murdered. And your parents were some of the people who decided not to kill for fun. So Valmart went to their house and killed them. And while he was there, he tried to kill you. But the spell ricocheted off your head and hit him instead. Now, no one knows if he's dead, or hiding as someone dead. But what's for sure is that he hates you for not dying. And it's sure that if he is alive, he'll try to finish off the job, probably when you are sleeping. And he'll probably look like someone you love, just to make it worse when he murders you. So, you know, be on the lookout for that, and, you know, be careful when someone loves you. Gulp, says Harry. Chapter 9. Whilst walking to the train station, Harry begins to feel the stomach butterflies accumulate. Hagar is then just stunned by the time of day. He must get that gunny sack to Dumbledore. So he gives Harry his train ticket and then just totally freaking disappears on him. Harry then thinks to himself, what the hell is meant by 9 3/4? Platforms aren't broken up that way. Willikers! Harry feels dreadfully alone at this point. But then again, in a way, it is a thrilling sensation. Here he is, a young lad, making his way in the world today. And the stacks of gold coins in his pockets ease his worry. Carting along the Turkish Owl and luggage, Harry makes his way up to interrupting a station man, only because he is afraid he might miss his train. Excuse me, where's platform 9 3/4? Fudge off, you fuck, says the horrible man. But thank God for the Irish. Harry overhears the red-headed mother of a red-headed herd of children speak wizardly, and he knows he's in luck. Follow them, Harry, Harry says to himself. Follow them or die. But watching them from a distance, Harry sees one boy, cart of luggage and all, disappear right into the brick wall between the 9th and 10th platform. Holy balls, I am not doing that, he thinks. Willikers. But some more kids whoosh through, and another and yet another, and Harry's nerves begin to settle. So finally he goes up to the mother and begs a lesson. Excuse me, Irish lady, can you show me how to do that? Here in the presence of such an honest and loving family, Harry feels immediate, latent Helsinki syndrome withdrawals for the Pork Family Project. He quickly shakes them off when the mother sweetly crimsons his bottom, and in Harry goes, like a reversal birth, into the negative plane of the brick wall that stands ominously in front of him. He overcomes the obvious fears attached to this little test and is on the correct platform. Ta-da! Ta-da! Ta-da forever! Well, bless my nippers, cries Harry. Bless them all day long. He stands in awe of the steaming engine, the train that shall propel him to his stage where he was born for, the Hogwarts Express. Chapter 10. As the Hogwarts Express drags along the countryside, all the kids' hearts race in time with the engine. The scene is so beautiful that the landscape is literally peppered with painters working out masterpiece after masterpiece. Ronnie the Weasel shows up and makes his grand entrance to share the compartment with Harry. The proud lad remembers Harry from the platform and takes a seat. In the introductions, Ron is struck with the face almost sacred when Harry introduces himself as the HP. The scar is called into question. It is shown, and it is wicked. The food service wench appears. Ron, obviously from a family whose money is spread thinly over a vast volume of loin product, cannot buy a thing. But the newly minted Monopoly champ HP flashes some coin, and the new friends celebrate over a pile of cakes and frogs and nipples of witchy Venus and rats and choco spells and fruit nuts, you know, wizardly fodder. The same kind of junky food you and I would wallow our mouths upon if we were in Harry and Ron's place. Ron loves Twizzlers. They talk over the syllabus and what's to be demanded of them at Hogwarts. Ron tells Harry that he is a pot of coffee by day, bottle of wine by night type of guy. Harry says, "Triple that and you got me." They laugh a congenial laugh, and both of them realize that they are instant friends. Friends forever. Just as Ron is about to produce yellow pillows, a spell he has learned at home, pillows of gold, he and Harry are interrupted by a horrible creature that is noisily and slowly making its way down the hall and finally appears in the doorway. Only upon closer examination do Ronnie and HP realize that this thing is a girl looking for somebody's frog. Her hair seems to be made up of hair follicle-sized serpents, a prepubescent Medusa. She demands that Ron finish his spell, but by mere proximity to such a wretched creature, Ron cannot concentrate and almost kills his rat instead of producing pillows of gold. She tries to degrade Ron, but only looks stupid. Knowing that these boys obviously hate her filthy guts, she sits down and repairs Harry's glasses with a pretty cool spell. The boys have to admit that this creature posing as a humanoid has some chops. Definitely some chops indeed. Only after the spell does she recognize our HP for who he is. She intros herself as Harmony and begs Ronnie of his name, but he only growls and smacks in her direction. This prompts her to leave, and as a last-ditch effort to please, she informs Ronnie of his chocolatey nose. As if he did not know. Chapter 11. Finally, the moment of truth. The god wheel of fate has stopped for all these kiddies on yes. Yes, in fucking deed, you will be a wizard. And this moment is the first in a series of moments that no matter what feelings those moments embody, yes, yes is still the answer. Yes to life, and yes to magic. Just look at their faces. Look at their auras. They are aglow. Dear readers, imagine a music that describes a nocturnal, heavenly yes as the children float on the black, still waters, boating up to the castle of Hogwarts School. Harry knows straight away that this will be a place where he shall surely brandish his wand valiantly. He knows in his heart that this is a stage where he will conjure and conquer the world with his ungodly charisma points. Harry trembles and steadies himself in the reassuring, pasty presence of Ron the Bear. This moment of yes consumes our Harry. He feels here that he is the thing of stories, and for this he nearly weeps a frenzy of weeps. The kids make a formation up to the school's entrance. They file up the main staircase and are met by none other than Professor Hardcastle McCormick, rasping her finger bones in withering patience as the children gather beneath her on the frontmost staircase. She speaks about the school and explains that the class here now will be divided into four different competitive schools. Her voice is chilling, like a piano made of frozen Windex. Her eyes float like smears of fish scales on her candle wax stump of a head. She goes on to describe the system of points and demerits, house cup, etc. Snoozers. All the kids are too tired to listen. The professor drones on in a dead parade about different alumni that everyone should remember, but is interrupted by a child named Upfish, who finally finds his frog. A victory for Upfish, but a staggering loss of control for Hardcastle. Clearly not knowing how to pull it back together, Hardcastle takes her leave. A dreadful kid with sunburned hair notices Harry somehow and calls him out in front of everybody. The murmurs begin. Like a cowboy, he saunters up to get a closer look at our HP. He intros himself as Mouth Oil, and of course, Ronnie busts up at this. The rich little bastard starts throwing class trash about Ronnie the Bear's hard-earning family being poor and rabbit-like. Of course, he goes for the shame spell. But our HP gets Ronnie's back by issuing forth a comment or two so deft I cannot even start to reproduce them here. This trumping does wonders for Harry's initial cred here at Hogwarts. Chapter 12. The children file into a glorious cafeteria where all the other pre-sorted students and teachers are awaiting the ceremony. A welcoming flute song accompanies their entrance as candles float in mid-air under a ceiling that appears to be made out of glass entirely. The night sky whispers an adjustment to the clouds above them. The faculty table is full of weirdo professors and goblin-faced women, and there are floppy and pointy head decorations, the true markings of master magicians. Hagar, Cromley, and friends sit awaitingly. Professor Dumbledore erects himself slowly and tells some jokes about death that most of the kids just don't get. He then, after warming up the crowd, introduces the blood-eyed cat that is head of security and then introduces the cat's manservant, Dazzler. He then closes with yet another joke about death, perplexing some and just plain scaring most of the kids. He sits down finally. Hardcastle announces that it is time to begin. Her manners are of that of a jilted lover's "I didn't love him anyway" sort of mood. The child sorting hat ceremony begins with the wretched harmony. A wise child she is, and reminds herself not to freak out up there in front of everyone. The poor thing has complex on top of complex. She perches on a seat up in front of all the kids, and Hardcastle places an oogity-boogity hat on top of her hair. It grind dances on Harmony's head and grumbles pleasurably Gryffindor. Applause all around, and Harry thinks to himself that this will be a long, long night. Next up, Mouth Oil is called to face the grinding hat, but before his ash cheeks can even start to pancake out on the stool, he is assigned to Slytherin. Some other kids get up and have their fates directed, and right then, a wicked woman casts a look at Harry that makes his scar hurt. Ouch! This is the weirdest woman Harry has ever seen. A dark, foreboding weirdo that Harry feels certain will be the kind of teacher that paddles for fun. Ronnie the Bear is next up for the hat. Ronnie is sure that the hat will bear down on him and hunch away at his scalp for nothing. I mean, everyone knows that weasels are put into Gryffindor. Ronnie's 20 brothers and 12 sisters are all Gryffindor students or alumni or faculty. The obvious is true. Gryffindor it is. Professor Hardcastle tries to say Harry Potter like it is no big deal. But the room goes quiet. Everyone edges in to see and hear what is going to happen next. The rustle of bets and cash is muted between robes. Harry doesn't want to bunk with mouth oil, but that hat starts in about Harry's potential and near limitless talent and how it could blossom wickedly in Slytherin school. Oh, Harry only winces at this constant bombardment of pressure to impress. This damn hat, all these fucking kids and teachers looking at him like he's a fucking television. Ah, fuck it, just don't put me with mouth oil, is all Harry keeps saying to the hat. Finally, the hat's oscillations tense and release upon Harry's scalp. Gryffindor, it is, it announces. Yes, the universe sighs its magical sigh. Harry is congratulated wildly by all his new bunkmates, but he feels numb and distant. A knowing glance is shared between the near-dead Dumbledore and the virile youth. Harry just hopes he can pound a few cold ones. Chapter 13. Dumbledore cast his Stand Without Effort spell. Following it up with his most pleasing Food of Plenty spell. If ever a room full of children has looked like little hyenas that have come upon a dead family of zebras, it is now. Piles of glitzy meats and sweetbreads appear. There are sweaty corns and honeyed everything. Talking bones loosen, and Harry relaxes into a whinish swagger. He talks closely with his RA. Hey, who the fuck is that woman over there? She's gotta be a half-troll. The RA replies, no, that's Professor Snape. She sucks for the most part, you know, acting mysterious and theatrical. God, I hate that shit, replies Harry. I'm here to learn, not to watch a performance. Just then, the conversation is busted up by a breeze of hilarious ghosts. There are women ghosts and musketeers. Little John the ghost shows up and demands a song of farts, or else. The Count of Reeds whips lashingly every child in the face. No one is able to escape his mustached giggle. A ghost dance begins, and the kids watch as a transparent mashing of flash dances and footlooses fog up the rafters of mealtime. At any rate, every ghost becomes bored and evaporates either into the walls or out through the ceiling. Every student's belly is distended with jelly, wine, and pudding pops. The dinner is over. The RAs guide the new Gryffindors into the stairwell. The staircases are a maddening, mobile architecture that forever fuck up the students' days by moving here and there without warning. The kids climb stair after stair, ad infinitum. Some talk about art. Others simply concentrate on not vomiting from the intense vertigo. After all the wine and meat that all of these children have eaten, they are just hoping to finally get to their rooms so that they may use the potty and acquaint themselves with the water closets. They file in front of a painting of the most beautiful woman ever around. The RA says the code word, and the lady in the painting loosens her perfect tongue in her mouth and beckons everyone present to enter. Beyond the painting lies the Gryffindor parlor. Smoking, cards, and nightcaps will all be the room's main functions for the kids, the RA goes on to explain. Every one of these kids' parents once relaxed and bonded here by this very fire. All eyes are heavy. The day has been a storm of excitements, and the children, after laying out their uniforms and shoes, are quickly starring in each other's dreams. It is a beautiful pale blue night. All the children are burritoed up in their blankets, all except for Harry. Amid the semi-sweet chomping at headgear, we see Harry stroking his bird, lost in thought, bathed in the cold water of moonlight. Who am I now, he thinks, as he winks at the night, and it seems to whisper back to him, you are everything. Chapter 14. Harry awakes to yet another tequila sunrise. He and Ronnie the Bear are lost and late for their first class. But when the boys stumble out of breath into class, they are delighted to find that the teacher is either late or just out for coffee. But in unison, their faces scream, holy freaking balls, as the cat has been Professor Hardcastle this whole time. Willikers. The professor puts together a clever witticism about tardiness and George Washington's trees full of cherries, and Harry makes another mental note. Never pet cats that you don't know. No, never pet anything. The potions class's doors thrown dramatically open, and in dances that black hole of a woman with the scar-aching glare. She leans with her best effort to strike an attractive pose, while beginning to whet her students' appetite with a taste of what kind of rhetoric could be expected here. The stark impossibility that such a thing could be human, not to mention a human that Harry has to pay attention to, is only matched with Malfoy's apparent infatuation with her. They look into each other's eyes like two serpents on a honeymoon. Professor Snape, astonished that she has an admirer, and Malfoy, astonished that he likes women. Snape, seeing now that Harry is not paying attention to her mouth's every shaping and massaging of notey syllables, calls him out and rags on his celebrity in front of everyone. Harry is surprised, for he was only taking notes intently. Then Snake demands from Harry how to make a certain spell. Harry good-naturedly says he just doesn't know. I mean, how could he? This is his first day. Christ! Driven by some unholy jealousy, the unfair Snake presses him again. What is such and such? Or how many rat tails are in minker foils? Produce antimatter. Again, Harry, with the oil of Olivier, acts humble, demure even. Thankful for the lesson. He controls the urge to slay Snake's ears with a few fiery riffs off his wand. But Snake finally subsides with her onslaught. She stupidly feels she has cowed our Harry. At lunchtime, the kids relax and compare first impressions on teachers. Ronnie the Bear tells Harry that he could hardly stand watching him cow to such an asshole back there. Harry explains to the bear that subtlety and patience are a great way to look pretty cool. The bear has to agree, and they give each other Fonzie looks. The rest of lunch is spent on mail reading, which is delivered by a host of birds that we the readers are already duly familiar with. Some kids get letters, others get ornaments that quickly fill with the mother's blood. Some desperately wait for their letters to arrive, which shall never, for they are the type of kids that mothers just never write to. Harry opts to read the paper. Now, dear readers, if you've ever paid attention to me, now is also a good time. Harry reads aloud to Ronnie and Harmony that the Leprechaun Bank, which he had been to earlier on, has now been broken into. It was the same vault where that gunny sack had been. It was busted into by what is suspected to be black art wizards from Valmart's order. Jeepers! But of course, the gunny sack was gone before those robbers got there. The kids seemed to smell the beginnings of an adventure here in these facts. The attention-starved Harmony, most of all. Chapter 15. Outside, Harry's class awaits their first lesson in broomstickers. Being that this is the last class of the day, the kids are anxious to get rowdy. Finally, Professor Meowmers takes her position in front of the class. This morning, Harry does have one thing in common with Mouth Oil, his mood. A mood of annoyance and pity for his frustrated, easily astonished, and shallow peers. Of course, Harry commands his broom with ease, and like the beginning of dueling banjos, so does Mouth Oil. Harry later will be displeased with himself for hating everyone today. Professor Catface, Mouth Oil, Tony the Shrimp, Facer, Yellow, Otter Pop, and yes, even trusty sidekick, Ronnie the Bear. Whilst Professor Catface Meowmers barks orders, Harry drifts off into his imagination. He lets his mind's eye take him on an inward exploration. He sees before him a giant cake, a wedding cake, his parents' wedding cake, and he wants to eat it. But then he realizes that this cake is Dumbledore's hat, and to reach it, he must climb up Dumbledore's body using the old rib cage and mouth, sockets and such as footholds. But before he can get halfway up the rickety old scaffolding of a man, degrading the saintly professor with his imagined dastardly feet and thumbs, he sees that the cake is indeed rotten, black, and toppled, obviously forgotten over the years, and adopted as a hat for reasons unknown to such a first year as Harry. This daydream is a weak attempt to stay amused during these idiot guide-styled classes. As H.P. comes out of his reverie, he is amazed to see that his friend Upfish has had some sort of serious accident. Professor Catface gingerly escorts Upfish away from all the jeering urchins and up towards the nurse's zone of awesome bedtime suckers. The kids begin to wrestle with wild nerves, having been awarded time away from a teacher. It seems that Mouth Oil has Upfish's beloved blood ball, threatening to crash it. Harry cannot take it anymore. Ah, fuck this, he says, and he all but punches Mouth Oil right in the head. But Mouth Oil, being in the same little bad boy mood, defies Harry and takes the battle of the limits up into the lower stratus. Will Harry defy Professor Catface Meowmers for a chance to totally burn Mouth Oil? The wretched Harmony tries to restrain our Harry, but he is deaf with rage. Their skill is immediately deft. All the boys and girls feel like lower organisms in the wake of their godlike abilities. In dazzling aerial combat, Harry burns Mouth Oil quickly. He gets Upfish's sphere back in a move that mixes martial arts with rainbow magic. After letting loose some steam, Harry does a few victory tricks and flourishes on his standard school-issue broom for the sake of all the kids below. As he descends upon a crowd of homies and newly converted homies who congratulate and pat him. Though he is only to be plucked away from the moment by that asshole Hardcastle McCormick. Ah, what a horrible day. Professor Hardcastle leads a sulky and punishment-expecting Harry down the hallway to the defense of the black arts classroom. She then asks a lizard-hugging, stuttery Professor Queerman if she can see the student known as Major Wood. Wood is the captain of the cribbage team, and Harry sees him as a Greek statue, an Adonis in witch's clothing. Clearly somebody that Harry can relate to. Now, dear readers, imagine that song, Eye of the Tiger, for Harry has been chosen as the new seeker of Gryffindor. His buddies all fall in behind them as they strut through the halls. This is a procession of cool kids. Every student dreams of knowing them. But, cavalierly, HP and the effing bear decide to break away from their homie's entourage and talk over some personal business. Though, soon, right afterwards, they are quickly accompanied by the wretched Harmony and cannot go into details about their boys-only style thoughts. But hello! Her usefulness again shows through as she decides to take Harry and Ronnie to the trophy case of honors. Behold, she manages out of her horrible mouth. Your dad was also a badass. Chapter 16. As the three are making their way through the stairwell, naturally, one of those buggering staircases shifts its course and sits them on a peculiar level. The kids, having nothing else to do tonight, their potions mixed, histories read, frogs destroyed, they decide to follow fate's lead. But the three are able to deduct that they are indeed on the forbidden third floor, and if found, they will be killed on sight, no questions asked. Before they are able to decide whether to continue their investigations, the three turn around to see the blood-eyed cat of security, who indeed sees them too. They make haste through the cobwebbery and darkness, like blind little cavefish, hungry for eyes, or a reason to have eyes, only to meet another dead end. Freaking door! It's fucking magic locked! Ronnie the bear quakes, but the wretched Harmony casts a spell so badass the lock falls apart and becomes a gas of rose petals that goes up their noses like a baby's challenge. They are in. And just in time, the blood-eyed cat must have summoned its manservant Dazzler, who idles like a van that's destination is being reconsidered. They are indeed in, but not away from danger, dear readers, because, whoa! Lying before them is a supersized portion of God's freak show creations, a three-headed giant dog, and it's getting out of a dream of eating kids, one for each head, and hurrah for the dog, the dream has come true. Obviously, it is still sleepy, for our three heroes are able to bar the door against it and get away safely. Harry puts up with the wretch, bickering with the bear over the practicality of a hungry, three-headed giant dog and a school full of tasty kids, when the wretch points out that it had to be guarding something. Harry takes note of this, and out of respect for her detective prowess, lets the wretch vent a little while before he takes his leave of her with the bear. Both he and Ron are hoping to score a few bottles of red wine to go with the olives that they pinched from the kitchen earlier. Chapter 17. Harry can hardly keep his heart in his clothes as he walks onto the cribbage field with Major Wood. His first lesson in the sport that could give him an outlet for his gathering rage and power. Major Wood's accent is so thick, Harry only hears it as a sort of music. A music from a shiny, muscular horn. A music of brotherhood and balls. Harry doesn't care much for the game's histories and specifics, but his ears perk up when Wood comes to what Harry is supposed to do. He hands Harry an ancient, leathery club, and Harry forces down a nervous throat lump. Next, Wood releases a ball that seems to have a will of its own. With all questions of what to do dissolving, Harry becomes a club and crashes it out of the park. Wood is obviously impressed, and Harry feels a relaxed joy. Harry knows that passion needs a vehicle, and chasing balls and wielding clubs seems pretty sweet. But Harry doesn't feel totally lost in these elements of the game. He still feels like the Harry without a home. A home where he may go wild is still not yet a home for him. It is at this moment that the golden snitch is produced. Harry immediately is nearly out of his skin with excitement over this ball. His destiny is here in this orb. He can feel it, like someone just kicked him in his fruit stand. Catch this ball, Harry, and we win the game. Harry's face explodes in a smile. This orb seems plucked from under Midas's tunic. The snitch then begins a clockwork strip tease and takes it into the air. It licks and beckons lasciviously on the wind. Harry is at home. Among totally what-the-fuck-styled faces, Professor Ognott starts off a class on levitation. All the kids sit bored out of their asses in what looks like a courtroom. Feathers in front of them, wands firmly brandished. Every child is going through the movements of the levitation spell, but their minds are on that weirdo teacher. What the fuck is he? I mean, just look at him. He's such a little weirdo. They all try very hard to pay attention, but his voice chirps out of his little bundled-up body in jerky attacks at normalcy. Every child thinks this, but Harmony. Harmony, being so wretched herself, she feels quite at home with the hideous creature and is able to levitate her feather with no trouble. The bear, being so disgusted with Ognott, turns his attention to Harmony. She seems to think that Ronnie can't do a simple levitation spell and makes a big to-do about her quick-witted abilities. Her spell is a delight for the professor. His head looks like a happy pizza left in a chicken house, covered in feathery bird sweat and oily discharge. Yuckers. Harry only sits there in a stupor. He, too, is overwhelmed with the talking pizza. After class, Harry, Ronnie, and the boys walk together, doing impersonations of the wretched Harmony, when the desperate creature herself bustles by, obviously hurt very deeply. HP knows he's got to make it right, even though it feels so good to make it wrong. Chapter 18, Halloween, yes! Gorgeous floating Jackie O's in the cafeteria, and every student is feasting. The spread is beautiful. Apples, candied apples, appled candy, candied whiskey, apple fritters, anything you could ever want. Upfish informs HP and the bear that Harmony has locked herself in the bathroom. She's been crying all day. Harry feels guilt pangs about this information. But Ronnie the bear, he could give a fuck. Just now, Queerman bust in, rambling in incoherence, but after a while, everyone makes out that he is warning them of a horrible troll loose in the school. Everybody freaks out. Apple chunks are cannoned by screams. Floating jack-o'-lanterns fall from the sky onto kids' heads, but the near-dead Dumbledore commands everyone's attention with a mighty roar. Don't panic, he says. Teachers, grab your spell bags. We will find this fucking troll, and we will kill his fucking ass. He means business, and everyone takes it seriously. Snake, however, seemingly scared out of her bloomers, disappears out the side door in cowardice. As the Gryffindors move towards their rooms of safety, HP and the bear realize that Harmony doesn't know about the troll and is in certain danger. This is the perfect chance to make it up to her. Well, Saber, and if we're lucky, we can sneak a peek at Dumbledore's chops. Then, running through the hall, they see the giant-sized troll shadow going into the girl's crapper. Jesus, Harmony is in there! Harry doesn't think he knows what he must do. Through teary eyes, Harmony looks up, and up, and up and up and up again upon a troll, huge with pineapple legs and a giant turkey drumstick. Wisely, she slowly backs away and tries to hide in a toilet, but the troll will not have it. He swings like a drunken major leaguer. But triumphant music appears. HP and Ronnie the effin' bear bust in on that troll and start selflessly defending that wretched girl by straightaway barraging that troll with spells that even mountains could hardly weather. The troll is so stupid, though, he does not even register the pain. But oh, he is dead set on destroying Harmony for some reason. He goes at her again with the club. Crash and whoosh! Crazed with fist of fury, Harry brandishes the crap out of his wand and springs onto that troll's head, no problemo. He shakes that troll back and forth and rams his wand up into the nose, poking over and over what has to be the smallest frontal lobe in existence. But that troll gets lucky, and he grabs Harry and holds him up by his leg. He is about to bash him in with a stupid drumstick. Whoosh! Whoosh! He's just barely missing! But now, who but the brave Ronnie the Bear whips out the old levitation spell and hovers the troll's club overhead, only to command it just right back down onto that troll's grody face. Thank God for that hideous pizza that taught me that move, whispers Ronnie to himself. The giant wobbles in a last dance of bodily knee-jerk aftershocks and falls into the conquered position. The kids stay on their toes, but wipe the nervous moisture from their brows. Harmony peels herself from the wall. This is the kids' first kill. They're understandably shaken. Harry reluctantly retrieves his wand in its most boogery state. Just as the kids are regaining their cool, Hardcastle McCormick and a gaggle of teachers, Snake included, rustle into the bathroom. She's pissed over the kid's safety being compromised and on the edge of a spastic dookie when she sees the troll's body. But Harmony steps up to the bat and lays it on the dotted line. I was in here, crying like an idiot, and these badass new gods came in and saved me. If it wasn't for them, I'd be in that troll's stomach for sure. Then, dear readers, Harry notices a tear in Snake's pants and blood all over her leg, and Snake notices that Harry has noticed, and he notices that she noticed that. I mean, there's a trait of noticing going on that is just bewildering. Hardcastle then scolds Harmony and demerits her a hard 20 points. Ouch. Now, right here, dear readers, you're gonna want to put the movie on pause before the next scene starts up and switch to the second disc of audio if you have downloaded it correctly. You start them both up again at chapter 19 and make sure that the audio doesn't lag when you get started so that they're both right there together. This is all that I've got for this part, and intermission is now starting to start.